I found Primer. This is what I was looking for. An elementary textbook that serves as an introduction to a subject or study, or is used for teaching children to read.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But elementary, like, introduction, that's what I was looking for.
Is it pronounced Primer, primer or Primer?
In Indiana, we say Primer.
I think both are acceptable, but I think that Primer is...
more proper? Preferred. Sorry, it was a lame joke.
No, yeah, I think it's Primer. Because the one I'm looking at...
Dictionary.com will know.
Well...
Have it read
I
out
always
loud.
Forgot... You remember? You know how, like, when they do the pronunciation, they have, like, the special pronunciation spelling?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't remember. It's probably not helpful. No, it probably was when I was in high school.
Primer, it would be an I with a horizontal line over it.
Yeah, yeah. and that's what the substance to coat, like the paint,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the
yeah.
Underpaint is the P with the whatever that is, the thing you said.
Yeah. Accent
the line.
It's primer, yeah, or especially yeah. British primer.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. With the upside down
prop,
E.
Yeah. Yeah, primer.
Primer.
It's super Britishy.
Yeah. That's all I meant.
Hello, governor. Have you used my primer?
No, you did it wrong.
Oh, gosh. This is my favorite thing on the planet.
Okay, should we talk about basketball for a few minutes?
Sure. If we have
sure.
To.
Okay. When, if you're going to make us, Joey.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth.
Whee!
I'm going to be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
That train is off the tracks.
Who doesn't love the bounce kids?
Hitler. Just prepare to. Yeah, so just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast, and this is episode 214, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're discussing PG's latest controversial comments, whether the fun era will stick and will help the team's rebounding. All that, plus we hear my stat of the week. Answer an undergoogleable question and preview the game of the week against the Knicks. Joining me are our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What's up, Undebeatables? I wanted to give a shout out to culture. I went and saw a movie today, Moonlight. Highly recommend it. And was surprised to find that Rodney Stuckey stars in this movie.
What?
What?
No, he doesn't. But an actor that looks exactly like Rodney Stuckey is like the main character. And so it was kind of distracting for me the last third of the movie to be like, Rodney Stuckey, what are you doing, man? Anyway, it's a really good movie. It's actually like super duper good. Well shot, well acted.
Was it a story about a dude struggling with hamstring injuries?
I don't want to spoil it.
So that means yes.
Maybe that's what he's been doing with all his time off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Recording fantastic films.
You think they said, hey, Rodney, we need you here on Thursday. So, you know, on Wednesday's game, he's like, oh. From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender. Mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? It's Thirsty Thursday, so drink up. Also like to shout out my friend Megan, who doesn't care about the Pacers, but said she would listen to our Thursday shows since we talked about more than Pacers. So I'm hoping she's listening this one. And thanks for letting us crash there on New Year's Eve.
Shout out. We'll take a new fan of not our podcast, but our random banter.
Sure. And anyone that protects Coulson from the elements, that gets a thumbs up in my book.
Yeah.
Coming to you from Eugene, Oregon, out west, our enforcer, John Harper.
What up, fellas? Shout out to Gareth Edwards this week. I'm looking forward to an Undewatchables very soon about Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually went to the IMAX and I saw that movie.
Well, you just broke Undewatchables. Thanks, Joey.
Yeah, sorry. It's only in the IMAX a limited time, so had to get there.
Attaboy. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Gareth Edwards, by the way, is the director. I'm sure nobody knows who he is.
I thought he was a fan that was just wanted an Undewatchables about it.
He could be both.
Hey, it's true.
That's right.
Not mutually exclusive.
Just a quick thing. I did a little bit of reading after I saw it, and apparently the soundtrack got scrapped because they had reshot some things, and then the scoring didn't make any sense. So they had to, and then the composer was not available, and so they had to get a whole new soundtrack, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had 4.5 weeks. Actually, the guy who ended up doing the soundtrack, the first new score guy since John Williams in this franchise, 4.5 weeks to write it. Not fresh air. He was on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but it was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really great score.
Yeah, he did a really great job. 4.5 weeks. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, right?
Well, I want to start this show off with I want to talk about a question we got in from listener Andrew Preston. He sent a tweet in during the Orlando game last week. And his question, or his comment, is, can we sign a petition to keep Ellis coming off the bench forever? He's much better paired with Miles and Brooks. And I would sign that petition. I think Monte Ellis coming off the bench is a great idea. I think that performance would be better for the team. You get the Mississippi connection with him and Al Jefferson. And working with C.J. Miles, you get a bunch of vets off the bench. And I like the starting lineup the way we got it right now. What would you guys – would you sign or start your own petition?
I've been behind that bill since day one.
Okay.
Yeah, we did an in-depth analysis of lineups. And in that process discovered that the starting lineup with Monte Ellis at the shooting guard is one of our least effective lineups. So, yeah, bring him off the bench, I'm totally in on. I still want C.J. Miles to start, but I'm starting to warm up to the Glenn Robinson the third. Either way, I think Monte Ellis, should be coming off the bench. He has a scoring punch, a veteran leadership, and stays out of that starting lineup that's better without him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, we've talked about having GR3 in the starting lineup simply just because he's taller makes us slightly better defensively. And yeah, he, you know, if the last couple games are any indication, he's going to help our rebounding disparity. I would amend one word. I wouldn't want to do it forever. Maybe for the length of Monte Ellis's contract. Like, I don't want Monte Ellis coming off the bench 10 years from now. I mean, God bless him if he's still in the NBA, you know, but
interesting theory. I agree with it, and I'd like to maybe see CJ Miles get some chances to start, but besides that, you know, I think if Monte is able to be take pride in coming off the bench, if he's able to do that and really lead that with Al Jefferson, like lead that second unit, like they'd be killer out there. Mm-hmm. With some good teamwork and just a bunch of veterans that'll play well together. So
sure.
I think we'd have good results for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also think it's time for us to renew our call for PG to move to two. Chris Axman had a great point about how maybe that's a better position for him on the pod that you did with him, Jason, last week. That's mm-hmm. something that we used mm-hmm. to talk about a lot, but we've, I think, because there was this talk about an experiment with him at four last year, we're just content that he's not a four. Like, we've been happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe it's time to renew our call for us to get another three. If we're gonna
CJ Miles is big enough.
He is.
To play the three spot.
Yeah. We can certainly experiment with that. But I think an ideal type is for us to go out and find ourselves a three somehow and just be really long. And I think that that's going to help us ultimately play the style of ball that we really want to play. Mm-hmm. And PG also arguably would be the best two in the league.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's no question about him being able to guard twos whatsoever.
Right. I think so. Shout out Andrew Preston, is that right?
Yep.
Thanks for writing in. My only caveat to this whole thing is, it's got to be an ego hit to Ellis to come off the bench, and it's really important, I think, that he stays engaged and happy for the success of this team, and so just to keep an eye on that. He may fit better in that second unit, but you know, I need the coach and the rest of the team convincing him, and he needs to buy into the fact that he, you know, he's really important coming off that bench.
Yeah, that's interesting. Counterpoint: I don't care.
No, I mean,
seriously, if this guy's supposed to be a veteran leader for us, like, I don't care. Like, be a leader.
Well, and that's,
and if he can't, and if he can't adapt, then he's not a good fit.
That's what Stuckey did. You know, not only did he embrace it, but he requested to move to the bench when he was a starter for the team before his hamstring kerploded. So
scientific term.
But I mean, I think, you know, if Monte is able to do that, you know, I think, you know, he could have great results, you know, by doing that. And he could really help the team.
Yeah.
If he's able to do it that way.
And I'm not trying to suggest that he would feel that way. I think that he'll fit in fine there.
Yeah.
I think even he said in the past that he's, you know, he wants to do whatever he can to help this team, right?
Yes. And we've talked on this show about what a good quality guy he is, even when we first got him. Like, this is a guy who'll do what he needs to do for his team. Like, he's got good character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's beyond the point in his career where he cares about his, you know, stats, I think.
Yeah.
So speaking of good character, after the first Chicago game last week, Paul George did a during an interview, threw his team right under the bus. Colson, you read this article. You know, they had some good results after that, but you know, he didn't look like a such a nice guy after that interview.
Yeah, so in the last show, I paraphrased him and put in my own thoughts and feelings and emotions. I'll go ahead and read you what he actually said. He said, "It hasn't been fun. We're trying to work through it. This has been one of the most frustrating seasons I've been a part of. If I don't approach it to be myself, to enjoy the process, to enjoy the grind, it's not only going to show on the court, but more so it'll show in the locker room. This is our work environment, and you know, everybody's got to enjoy coming to work." And then he says, "Maybe I'm just living in the past of how good we used to be, the personnel, the guys I had around. I'm still living in that moment, maybe. I got to put myself into a different team, and maybe I have to do more. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I just have to do more now." So, yeah. Our speculation that he was, you know, sort of stepping back to let this team figure out who it is and to let the guys' confidence, the other guys get their confidence up. Maybe we were wrong on that. It's rough if you're his teammate to wake up the next day and go, "Wow, he used to like playing this game. He used to think the players around him were good, but I'm apparently trash and he no longer has fun. And that's why we're not winning games." You know, Harper, you talk all the time about having using the media strategically. I'm not sure that this feels that way. This feels like a guy who's just sounding off, and I'm not sure I mean, I suppose the immediate results were positive, but this is kind of rough. I really do feel like he threw his guys under the bus.
I totally get that reading of it. And honestly, all of the way that it was carried in the media framed it that way, So, of course, that was my first read on it, too. But after I read the direct quotes, it felt to me like maybe what he was actually trying to do was not chuck his teammates, but chuck Bird.
Okay.
And that what happened is that he ended up aiming the bus at his teammates by accident.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting theory. I mean, but doesn't that still just throw the guys under the bus? Like, if Bird brought in the wrong guys, I mean, they're still the wrong guys for him. You know what I mean?
Well, but part of it is about him doing more, and maybe that role hasn't been defined very well for him, again, by Bird. We spent a lot of time on this pod talking about, you know, him wanting to move him to four. Like, so the guy who's running this show does not have a very well-defined vision, or at least not one that he communicates well to his squad, right? Mm-hmm. So the rest of the guys are left in a position where they're left to guess and figure it out on their own, which is hard, and it's work, and it sucks, and it could be easier. I mean, it's always going to be hard, and it's always going to be work when you've got a new group of guys, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's a completely new group.
And it is a completely new group. And they are working on it. They're trying to put in the work, but there are going to be bumps in the road. I think that a lot of this could be alleviated top down. And I'll put the coaches under a pin for a second, because we got plenty to say about that too. But just Bird on his own has done a bad job of letting me know as a fan, and by extension, I think maybe the players as well, what the expectations are of them individually and how these parts are supposed to fit together.
Well, one thing I take from this was, you know, he's like, maybe I need to do more. And he's talking about, like, in reference to the days when they were going to the Eastern Conference Finals with, you know, with Danny Granger and David West and Roy Hibbert. And yeah, of course he has to do more. Like, they built the team around him versus those teams back there. Those were not his teams. Mm-hmm. So he's the centerpiece, and they've moved everybody in reference to Paul George. So they're expecting more out of him than they were back then, because he's, you know, the top talent on the team. He's the future of the franchise. Sure. So yes, they do expect more out of him.
Sure, but have they put the pieces around him that have had to make him do more work? Right? Are the right pieces around him for him to succeed?
Well,
is that the question?
Maybe I don't know. So I read this interesting piece on Indie Cornrows this week by Chris Cooper, I think is his name, and he basically was making the argument that Paul George, from his Olympic experience, Paul George really identifies with the defensive end of the basketball court. And so it got me to thinking that in some ways, maybe last year, Paul felt like he was had to do too much on the offensive end. He was carrying the load so much. And he expressed as much through the media in sort of similar types of frustrating comments. And, you know, Bird addressed that. He brought in a bunch of really talented offensive players to help with that situation. You know, Teague, Thaddeus Young, you could argue Al Jefferson for sure. And now Paul George maybe feels like he has to do too much on the defensive end, because he's basically the only plus defender that we have, right? I mean, Turner is getting there, but he's not there, you know, every possession yet, although he's, you know, it tops in the league in blocks, basically. So I wonder if that's maybe the part of the frustration, right, is that it's a good complement of players that addressed a problem, but then it created a whole nother problem alongside it, right?
Right. And to sort of speak to Joey's point about, you know, the superstarness thing, I don't want this to come out the wrong way, and I'm pretty sure it's gonna, so we're just gonna go with it. It's difficult to hear Paul George talk about the superstar calls and then say something like this, right? Yes, he has to do more, right? And that more doesn't necessarily just need to be on the defensive end or the offensive end or stat-driven. But I think that at least Larry Bird would say it's the leadership thing, right? We need you to be more involved in helping this team progress. And then we get into, you know, at least for me, like, you guys had a great point last week on the pod about, you know, the mentor lieutenant thing. And who's this guy's mentor right now? My biggest objection to what happened last week with the referees wasn't even my, I guess my biggest objection was Paul George not being more strategic. But second to that, it was Nate McMillan doubling down. I have a real problem with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was poorly played. He needs to go out to the media and say no. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We were not the aggressors in this game. We lost this game. And he can't pussyfoot around his best player, right? Mm-hmm, that's not mm-hmm. helpful. He needs to,
and it reflects on the rest of the team poorly. You saw Miles Turner after the Wizards game come out and say something on Twitter. Basically, he deleted the post, but you know, was just following. He's just following his leader. You know, he's trying to be a good teammate, is what he said, right?
But see, I read that differently. I think that Miles Turner went out of his. I mean, he's trying to show Paul George that he's got his back, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he's trying to set himself up into more of a leadership role. And it was imperfect the way that he went about it. But you're right. He is following that guy's lead. And so I'll forgive that. I'm not worried about that.
Well, I guess the point I was trying to make is McMillan is setting up the situation where that type of argument is totally plausible or whatever.
Right.
Or is allowed.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's valid. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Right. And so we've talked a little bit about, you know, sort of channeling the anger and the badness and the losses into something positive. Well, it doesn't help when Nate McMillan lets the refs be the scapegoat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It's clear at this right. point that he's not a great manner in that respect. And I'm sure Larry Bird is saying, the more that I need from you is leadership because you're a superstar.
Right.
And he's probably never sat Paul George down and told him that because he's Larry Bird and he doesn't use sure. his words.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked about this on the pod before too, that if you're going to be Paul George and you're going to be, you say you want to be an MVP, like, you're always going to have a huge burden. Like, that's just the thing. You know, if you're one of the top 10 guys in the league, it's going to be on you a lot of the nights, right?
Yeah.
And that's just something that you have to look in the mirror and be like, okay, I just have to bring it. I have to bring more, you know, like.
Well, I like the point you made, Jason, though, which is, you know, it's probably partially defensively that he's concerned about right now. I mean, he used to be – him living in the past was as a team where he didn't have to guard everybody on – you know, everybody on the floor. That he mm-hmm, could trust mm-hmm. the other four guys on the floor with him to play solid defense. You know, we had a good defensive squad.
But why do you
squad.
Think that he's talking about that, though?
But, I mean, he has more help offensively this year. The team can score. So what is he upset about? He's upset about that we're losing. Why are we losing? Well, we're not rebounding. We're not playing defense. You know, so that's just where I'm coming with this. Yeah. Where he used to have guys that played rebound that rebounded and played defense.
I'm concerned. I'm concerned that we're trying to get inside the mind of Paul George to some extent, right? I mm-hmm, think that he mm-hmm. does have some legitimate beefs here, right? And I think that, you know, the transition from not a leader to a leader is a difficult one. And he's being asked to do really different things. And I'm going to push very hard here that I think that a big part of that is that people aren't telling him what he's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you're getting back to this mentorship issue.
It's not his job to figure out more or delegate, not his job, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's 27 years old. That's Nate's job. That's Larry's job, right? That's not his job. Someone needs to figure it out, sit down with him, and get on the same page. And if when he goes to the media and says, I feel like I have to do more, that's a failure of leadership, and it's not his.
Yeah. Well, I'd say the two times, you know, he's, you know, upset in this, and the two times I see him upset on the court are these two. Number one, when there's failures defensively around him,
mm-hmm.
and you know he's got his guy, and you know he switched or whatever, and that happens to be somebody open under the basket. You know, he's worked his ass off, and then there's still an easy bucket, you know, near him because, you know, someone, you know, there's either bad communication or whatever, but he will turn around, throw up his arms, and, you know, say something to whoever it is that made the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And the other
mm-hmm.
time is when he doesn't get the call. This is actually something I really don't like. Recently, I've seen this a couple times where, you know, he's got the ball offensively, doesn't get the call, and then basically what he'll do is he'll just foul somebody so he has time to talk to the yeah. referee. And it's not productive. You can, you know, I guess you want to talk to them while it's still fresh. But yes. It's kind of wasteful. You know, you're losing a foul, and
yeah.
Those are the two times I've seen the most frustrated.
No. Again, that's not good. And that's frustration, you know, in sort of a small sense, right? When you're going to the meeting, you're talking about stuff, that feels like bigger stuff. I almost want to talk about that in two different ways. But even that stuff, that frustration on the court, someone has to address that with him, right? Who's the person who's being like, look, Paul, man.
Yeah.
Like, yes, teach. Like, yell at your guy. Like, you don't think MJ is going to yell at his guy after that play? Yeah, he is. Right? And we would never say, oh, yeah, that's you can't do that. But the problem is that it becomes a pattern, right, Joe? I mean, that's – it's something that we're seeing more.
Yeah. I've seen it more than one game, you know?
And so whose job is it to be like, okay, Paul, that's a problem, and then bring the other four guys who screwed up on 10 plays that game and get them all together and figure it out? Whose job is it? Whose team is it? I'm not even sure it's Nate's team. Like, is Paul frustrated because it's his team? Is he the coach of this team right now?
Yeah. Maybe Dan Burke is the coach of this team right now.
Maybe.
I don't know. I definitely see him doing a lot more talking in huddles than Nate McMillan is at times. So do we want to get into this conversation now? Nate McMillan if you're Larry Bird, would you make a coaching change now? You certainly have buyer's remorse, right?
Okay,
for the Colson rant?
We weren't happy with this pickup when it started, right?
No, like, I know we weren't, but if you're Larry Bird at this point, are you starting to question this decision?
We have remained quietly optimistic that this would work out, that a fresh voice would make some changes. But we're what? More than a third of the way through the season, and we've got our superstar lashing out at the media, at the refs. We've got
potentially his higher-ups.
Yes, reading. And yeah, without a doubt. And essentially a rudderless team that's playing 500 ball in the weak East with a ton of talent. Like, I think it's time to maybe start having that conversation. I really want Nate to succeed, but this is starting to look more and more like the wrong hire, which is what we've been saying since it happened. So I hate to say I told you so, but I feel like we told you so, Bird.
Okay. Well, so then let's assume for a second that it wasn't the right hire. What do you do right now at this point in the season?
I mean, you can't lose a season, right? I mean, can you just go ahead and say, give him the shot, give him the whole year? Because it is early. He did have a ton of new pieces. Let's see if he can pull this thing together. Do you give him that shot, or do you just say, hey, look, I can't wait. I got to bring in somebody else. But then that's almost a lost season too, because you're bringing in a whole new philosophy, voice, offensive sets, defensive sets, like in the middle of the season. I think you almost have to hold out and see what Nate does. But, man.
Yeah, I think it's too soon. You know, I will say that there's been not a whole lot that I've seen that's really impressed me, but there have been I'll tell you what, when you come in after a timeout, after the commercial break, and their inbound play gets intercepted
like twice in a row.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't mean you didn't get a great shot. I mean, like, they just took the ball away from you. Then, you know, that's not very impressive to me. That's just a small part of it. But there are some new things going on offensively.
Oh, the offense is definitely better.
Yeah, the defense is as regressed as much as the offense has improved, or more. But I mean, at this point, like, yeah, it's there's no reason to just to throw away. You know, you already made a ton. There's a ton of upheaval. You do it again, there's going to be as much. You just got to, like, let this one go, like, to the end of the season. You know, they're not going to. You know, the players I think are the biggest factor in the team's success. Well, you definitely need the leadership, you know, changing out the head coach if you want to do Dan Burke for the rest of the season, whatever. Like, that's not going to make a huge difference, I don't think. So I'd say let it finish out. And maybe this team is going to gel. You know, they've not been as bad, you know, the last couple games. They looked like a different team. So,
well, I mean, so I agree with you, Joey. I think it's too early now. And I do think that there's a good opportunity over the next month for this team to come together, if only for the fact that their schedule is going to lighten up And they can string together some wins. And if you do that, if you string together four or five straight wins in the Eastern Conference, all of a sudden you're, you know, looking at home court advantage in the first round, right? Then you just play 500 ball the rest of the year. But if we're at the All-Star break and we're three games under 500, which is about a month and a half from now, I think it's not a necessarily unjustified move to just say, look, I was wrong. Sorry. We'll go with Dan Burke for the rest of the season and then launch a new coaching search in the offseason. I mean, the Pacers tend to be a more frugal than that. So given that they just signed McMillan to a whatever it was, 4 or 5 year deal, something ridiculous, they're probably not going to do that. But I mean, because you also have to think long term if you're Larry Bird. Your number one job if you're Larry Bird is to make sure that Paul George signs that max extension next summer. That's your job. And so whatever you have to do to make that dude happy and get him to sign that contract, that's what you got to do. And if that means firing Nate McMillan three quarters of the way through his first season, that's what you got to do.
Well, because this is my concern. What we're maybe talking about right now is our hope for the season is that Paul George and the team can come together. And that's asking more of Paul George to, you know, more on his plate, as opposed to saying, hey, this coach is going to come and help us figure this out. By not firing Nate, we're just rolling the dice that the guys are going to gel. I mean, is that where we're at?
And who could you bring in and make a team gel, you know, in January?
No. My point is, you by firing the coach and bringing a new coach, you're protecting Paul George, as opposed to saying this is on your shoulders.
You're protecting him from himself.
Yes,
I'm just kidding. If you fire McMillan, like, I guess what's the signal that you're sending that we're looking out for you, even though you may have lost the season because of this?
Is there time for this thing to get turned around? Yes, it's the East, but where's the leadership? And do we have to require that from our best player, who we really want to convince this is the place he needs to be, and we're going to make his job as easy as possible to go out and win basketball games?
So I had this epiphany earlier this week when I was listening to the great podcast, Jason, that you did with The Prophet. He was talking about how maybe a best case for us is not making the playoffs and getting a good draft pick, because Larry Bird does really well in the sort of 10 to 12 draft range.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me that with what I see from this team right now, like, I'm concerned right now about us having a culture of losing. The types of things that I see from this team, the inconsistency, you know, the sort of unevenness, what looks from the outside like a real lack of top-down communication, these all feel like organizational problems that are manifesting as a culture that's not set up to succeed. I feel like if we don't make the playoffs this year, we could be in real trouble.
Mm-hmm.
With or without Paul George. I don't know if that means that you get rid of Nate right now. Like, for me personally, the verdict is out on that. Like, I'm not sure what you do right now, but I will tell you that we have to make the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. We have to. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of changes have to be made. I don't have the article in front of me, but you know, there were these quotes, you know, floating around from, you know, I think it was something that Paul George said about, you know, empowerment, about playing empowered and being empowered on the court and stuff. And that is something that Paul George is going to need to feel, right? Mm-hmm, he's going to need to feel like he's backed by his team and his organization, by his team from below and his organization from above in order to be successful on the court and off.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'll just make this one point, and then we're probably ready for a break. But so that conversation was a conversation between Jan Mahinmi, a former Pacer, and CJ Miles. So it's sort of ironic that this message of empowerment, or, you know, teammates needing to empower one another, which seemed to carry a message into the locker room of the, you know, after those comments, basically, which got, you know, into the media, and I'm sure the guys discussed them. That's when the Pacers played well against the Bulls and then the Magic. So it's sort of ironic in a way to come full circle from Paul George being like, man, I remember when we had good players here, to now it was a former player's message that maybe is now a spark for what this team needs to do.
And Jan Mahinmi, always a great soldier, man. Like, that dude's going to speak a little truth, right? And I don't know. I'm very forgiving of just to kind of wrap up the conversation, we started with the quote from Paul George that seemed to chuck his teammates under. I really feel like this was a shot across the bow at the organization, and he has problems being strategic in the media. He needs a better PR team, but I really feel like he's trying to do the right stuff a lot of times. He just needs to take a couple days before he makes it to craft the message a little bit better.
I also want to say this before we go. I'm not sure that I'm advocating that we fire Coach Nate McMillan. As a manager myself, I always my philosophy was slow to hire, slow to fire. And if you do have to fire somebody, it's most often a failure of my leadership, right? You know, if you're having to fire someone, it's not always my fault, but a lot of times it is, because I didn't put them in positions to succeed. And so I would be slow to fire this guy, but if we do have to fire him, I think Larry Bird needs to look in the mirror, because he wasn't slow to hire.
That's the problem, right?
He's been a failure in his leadership role with Nate.
And he's not going to look in the mirror. Right? He's not going to see his own failing in this, right? He's just not. He's going to say, I hired you to do a job. It's not done. I don't care about the labor pains. I want the baby. Mm-hmm. Get her done.
Right. Well, it's a man's career and family and lots of stuff, you know?
Well, he's not going to, have problems feeding his family.
Yeah, that's true.
He gets he's going to be making millions.
He's done
all
right.
That's not the issue.
I think we should probably take a break.
The Trump's pretty well.
Yeah. It's time for a break. You guys got to cool off. I feel like you're at each other's throats.
I got to get ready to get really pissed at these guys about some new stuff in the second.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to take a break then. This one, again, found from the Turn Off Your Radio playlist coming out of Bringing Down the Band. This one's Cookbook featuring Indigenous. It's called Jax Teller. It's just a really fun one. We'll get the track for you here. It's called Jax Teller, but there's a video that goes with it as well. It's great. A really fun one, so check it out. On and on and on and on. Pure emotion in the ocean. I get it going, no need for the lotion. No magic potion, to hell with the wizardry. Tell tall tales, that's the way of the industry. I'll be where the winners be. My swimmers connect, create the fly chemistry. Cliff Huxtable juxtaposed to new tracks. My son watches Clifford, but orange is the new black. How you doing, Chewbacca? Flying in my Falcon, keep my rhymes up in my school locker. Smooth talker, something like a boondocker. I'm spaced out, Michael Jackson moonwalker. I see a nice girl fly with door knockers on. She's so hot, bomb the brand new Chaka Khan. I set my sights to get her. She better catch the vision, cuz never will I sweat her. I'll be the David Guetta mixed with the Che Guevara. The metal world peaks lounging in a leather sweater. Let's stay together, Al Green with that can feel. I got a strong, keep it real, and nice automobile in my automobile. Let's call it Autobahn. Saw the homie, I'll be sure, yo, his song's a bomb. Night and day, right away, I make you move your feet. Got that exclusive lead, that DJ Clue, you losing sleep. We're back from the break. Thanks to Cookbook, putting out good work. We'll give you a link to his channel on YouTube. Good stuff. Next, we want to talk about my stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week.
This week, there's a lot of things going on in the NBA. A lot of things we could talk about, but what we got to talk about is James Harden. This year we've talked a lot about how he's just putting up crazy numbers. But as this Ball Don't Lie article says, he ended the year by putting up all the stats. he put up a career high in points, career high in rebounds, career high in assists against the Knicks in one game, putting up 53 points, 17 assists, 16 rebounds. He's the first player in history with 50, 15, and 15. He ties Wilt Chamberlain for the most points on a triple-double. He led the entire league in all three categories that night.
What?
Colson, you love this, man. What's up? why is the beard better than you?
No, let me reframe this just to make it perfect for Colson. Why is James Harden the best point guard ever?
You know, I don't know. I feel like he's slowly winning me over with his stellar play and his stopping on a dime stuff. I really like that. I thought it was pretty cool. I still don't really like D'Antoni. I still don't really like the Rockets uniforms. I like Clutch, and I'm sort of coming around on James Harden.
What about the beard? Are you coming around on the beard?
Not really.
No?
Not really. Look, this is absolutely incredible. I mean, what a night for the guy. And, you know, it is D'Antoni's offense that he has the keys to, and he's doing whatever he wants. But God, I hate – they're not going to go to the finals. They're not going to – they're probably not even going to get out of the first round. Whatever. Screw these guys. I'm out. I'm out on the Rockets. I'm out on Harden.
Really? And they won the game too, mind you.
Whatever.
I'm just – honestly, the thing I'm most impressed with is getting that many points and that many assists in a game. That's just, you know, fully engaged. You know, the rebounds, it's really impressive, obviously, to get that many rebounds as a guard. But that many assists, you know, that means you're scoring or leading the scoring in almost every possession.
Yeah.
We're in a situation in which we've got a two-time MVP in Steph Curry, right, who plays point. And two other guys, one of which is vying for a season-long triple-double, first time since Big O. And even he is not the best point guard in the league right now. You've got the best shooter in the history of basketball, a guy who might get a triple-double for a season, and there's another guy who's better? Like, this is just an insane year of basketball.
I forgot about that Curry
guy.
Like,
appreciate it. That's all I'm saying. Just appreciate it.
No, it's really cool. You're right. We don't even talk about Curry anymore, and he's still freaking incredible. He can still shoot from the parking lot.
He's incredible.
Yeah, and he was the only thing we talked about last year, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was – people were showing up to watch him warm up 2 hours before games. Like, that's how good he was.
Yeah, they had to change the gate open time so people could get there and watch him warm up.
And now he's, like, barely on SportsCenter.
You know Steve Kerr is loving this.
Yeah, it's probably good for them.
Steve Kerr is loving this.
And quietly, Golden State is 29-5.
Yeah.
A terrible record for them.
totally horrible. Goodness gracious. Are all of these numbers, is this just a weird confluence of circumstance in Houston and OKC? Or is this to do with the way that NBA basketball is played now? That everything is at hyper speed and people are shooting three-pointers a bunch?
Well, that explains points, but that's not the assists and the rebounds.
Yeah, you remember when we did that stat? We were talking about Russell Westbrook's triple doubles, and like the pace was like almost twice as fast when Big O was playing basketball. Like,
oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean,
yeah.
this is just insane. This is just
really good basketball players playing really good basketball as well.
Yeah, and the pace is faster than it's been in. You know, it's getting faster, but it's not as fast as it was historically. Like, these guys are just playing amazing basketball. So the Rockets right now are 26-9. Yeah, okay, they're pretty good. Oklahoma's 21-13 on the back of only Russell Westbrook, really. Mm-hmm. Man.
But these are guys answering the bell, right? Like, they saw Steph Curry do what he did last year and all the accolades that he got, and they said, this guy's not that much better than me. Russell Westbrook was like, are you kidding me? I can do so many things this guy can't do.
Hmm.
Forget even the defensive end, right? And James Harden, James Harden for his entire career is going to kill himself to not be bested by Russell Westbrook because of the way that things went down in OKC, right? And these guys don't get to this level without being ultra competitive. And, you know, I'd love for this to be a, you know, hey, you know, we're paying these guys what they, you know, deserve now. So, you know, strictly comes out of the salary thing. But really it's just, you know, all these guys know, hey, you know, there's room for amazingness. You know, if Steph wants his threes, fine. Give him his threes. I'm taking assists, I'm taking rebounds, and I'm taking steals, and we'll see who's the better point guard. And it's great for the game.
So I'll tell you what, I think James Harden's having a ton of fun right now, filling up the stat sheet. Russell Westbrook having fun. You know, Curry's having fun. Durant's having fun. And I think I saw a smile on Paul George's face a couple games this last week, Jason. You think he's starting to have fun too?
I think he is. And I think this is really the key to this team is you know, we talked about it on last week's pod, that they need to find joy. There was no joy in Mudville. And we said they either needed to find joy or they needed to win a couple games. And maybe they needed to do both
preferably
of those things.
Both. Yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden this season might turn around. And so the question is, I guess, is this era of fun here to stay? Or is it going to elude us as it has all season, where we maybe put together a couple good games and say, oh, this is the team I thought it was. Only to have them sleepwalk through a game in Miami or get it handed to them by Carmelo Anthony or something like that. What do you guys think? Coulson, you feel like the thoughts, feelings, and emotions of this team are headed in the right direction?
Oh, I definitely think they're headed in the right direction. And I feel like they are hashing something out. They're working on something. I'm just not convinced that we've turned the corner just because we thought we've done it so many times this year. I feel like this is a little too fragile. We're on a 2-game win streak, you know, against 500 teams. I'm not ready to say this, that we've saved the season.
You're a scorned lover is what you're saying.
I've been burned too many times. But I think we're moving in the right direction. Just go out and play hard. Winning is fun.
I think the wins, the ones against Chicago and Orlando, I don't think they were the same as, you know, some of these other ones that they had sort of just, finagled a win at the end. You know, I think they were good, solid wins, and I think they're great team efforts, and the team was excited the whole time because they've been playing well, moving the ball well, and you know, when the bench is excited, that, you know, that it's an easy indicator that everyone's having fun. And, if the bench is engaged and you lose the game, you know, that's different than everyone being sad the whole time and, you know, and losing the game too. So I think there's a big difference, at least in the team chemistry side of that, where you're going to lose some games. But, you know, you can feel good at the end of a loss anyway, even if even if it's a bad beat or something, like, you know, when the teams are happy together and winning and you lose some, but, I think that's what we saw in those last two were like sort of, they were good wins, but if they had they not won those, it wouldn't have been as bad as some of the other losses, you know, we've seen throughout the year.
Until we string together 3 or 4 or 5, as far as I'm concerned, we are manic. Like, we are just super high highs and super low lows. We need someone like emotionally to level us out, and I still want that to be Miles Turner so bad. Like, I feel like he can be the guy who brings fun back into the game. Like I said, I think that he's trying to carve out a little bit bigger space for himself on the team, and I think that what he can really bring early is just that. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, just the childish love of the game, right? Dan Burke is awesome, and I'd never want to say a bad word about that dude. But I think that what happens with a certain type of coaching is that you get a whole lot of slaps on the wrist and you don't always get the pat on the ass. And we know Dan Burke is probably like that. I don't know if Nate McMillan's like that or not. He just I'm not sure that he's really doing either effectively, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But we need to find ways to celebrate, absolutely, the things that we do well and have fun doing that without losing, you know, the sort of, hey, we did this really crappy, right? And I feel like some of the manicness comes from, let's celebrate all the good stuff, and then we're just ignoring the bad stuff. And then things start going poorly, and we're just concentrating on the bad stuff. Like, we need a little bit more balance in our lives as Pacers fans. And these guys on the team need it too. So I don't think that we've turned any kind of corner here, but I am hopeful that there's a lot of room for that, right?
The only issue that I would take with the things that you said is that I don't think we get high enough with the highs. Like, we, our lows are super low, and when we do well, it's not so much that we good that the team goes over the top and it's like, oh, we're amazing, like in the super manic phase. Yeah, they just sigh. They're like, yeah, okay, good, we're not failing.
Thank God I didn't screw that up. Yeah,
yeah, exactly, right. And so I would like to see them, yeah, I mean, even if it's maybe detrimental at some point, to just be like overly exuberant and enthusiastic. I mean, I think, you know, yeah,
like,
you're totally right,
it's important material. Like, look at the Warriors. Like, yeah, teams hate us because we're celebrating too much. Like,
yes.
Put that on the bulletin board.
Exactly. Exactly, right? Yeah, and I mean, I think that winning in the NBA, you know, winning cures all ails. So if we string together five straight, yeah, everybody's going to start feeling good about themselves and being more confident, including the fan base.
Well, and I, you know, I'm looking at the schedule. We have a real chance to you know, win five in a row. We've got to go at Detroit, Brooklyn, and then New York, both at our house. But then we're going to go on the road to the Denver Nuggets. The Denver Nuggets are 500 squad, and let's say they just beat the snot out of us. Like, how are we going to take that? Like, I mean, I'm concerned about the emotional fragility of this team. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we've had that problem. That's been the mark of this team for the last couple of years. In fact,
I disagree with that.
You do?
I do. I don't think that we're emotionally fragile. I mean, it's not like guys just go and whine and cry about stuff. Like, that's not my thing with this team. It's just that we have all this negative stuff and we don't channel it well, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, every team goes through that, right? It's like you're going to feel like crap about the bad effort that you put out, but it just – it doesn't feel like there's any system in place. There's no one sort of leading the, hey, you know what? You did suck tonight, but that's all right, because guess what? Tomorrow's another night. And we've got a chance to do better. Like, it just doesn't feel like there's anybody saying that since Shaw left, you know?
Interesting, yeah. Or, it, you know, at some level, I mean, this is getting back to part of the conversation we had in the first half. It feels like a rudderless team, that there's not somebody with a plan. You know what I mean? You don't, you know, you look at these teams like, you know, you model yourselves after the San Antonios, mm-hmm, and the Golden States of the world. And you feel like even if they have a bad effort or a horrible game, you still feel like Pop is going to go into the locker room and have a plan the next day, right? He's going to come in and say, okay, let's scrap this, or this is the piece of film that we need to watch. And, I mean, I don't know that McMillan necessarily knows what that piece of film is or what the buttons are to push on this team. And part of that is, you know, it's a new team. He's a new – well, I guess he should know – many of the personnel has been around, so you should know how to push some buttons. But
there's the more extreme example of the Rockets, right? Like, hey, what we do is shoot threes, and you missed some threes this game, and you lost this game. But you know what? This is our identity. This is who we are, and we're going to keep shooting threes, and we got to trust the system.
But they also have
they have
a superstar who knows himself,
mm-hmm,
and James Harden, right? Like, he knows who he is, and the team is clearly like. James Harden passes because he wants to, not because it's demanded of him, right? Like, Paul George feels like it's incumbent upon him to do these things for his team. Like, he has a sense of team that's different, I think, from James Harden. And I think that that's a lot of your objection to James Harden, is that he kind of doesn't give a crap about winning or the team or anybody.
Yeah, right? That probably is my objection.
Right? And Paul George is just a different breed of animal. Like, I feel like, without going too Freudian here, like, he holds himself very accountable, and he's a perfectionist. He wants everything to be good on the court, right? But his ability to translate that into reality isn't where he wants it to be yet, right? Like, he's not a good enough leader yet. He's not good enough at, you know, organizing the offense or defense yet. He's working on all this stuff really hard, but he's not good enough at it yet. James Harden doesn't care. He'll just let fly.
Sure.
And there's a real freedom in that that Paul George doesn't have because he has so much respect for the game.
Right, but also he was – Mike D'Antoni understood that, create a system around a guy that was just going to do it anyway, right? So that's a system situation. Right now
– Well, but I don't think that's counter argument to what I was saying. Like, D'Antoni has a plan, like, and he knows this is the plan. No. So if they go and have a bad effort, he comes in and says,
he was the right coach, forget about that, guys. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. He's like, what we're going to do is we're going to keep doing this, and we're going to make threes tonight, and
that's
we're going to win.
You know, and if they miss them and they lose a game, they don't scrap the whole plan and start over. They say, we trust in the plan. I completely agree with that.
Okay.
My point is, we don't have – we don't do anything well. We don't have an identity, right? So we are like 15 or below in almost every major statistical category except pace, which we're like eighth in. You know, like, we just don't do anything particularly well. And
well, at least they're mediocre quickly.
And consistently.
I think it was in a Bob Kravitz article when he basically asked Paul George, he's like, what does this team do well? And then he was like, and after he stared through me for about 15 seconds, he just looked at the ground and said, nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. And so how do you say, okay, this is what we do well, and this is our identity, and this is who we're going to be, now my coach is going to put me in position to succeed in this way?
Well, scrap that. We've just established that that's not possible. So the question becomes, Colson, what do we need to first do well? Because we had talked about trying to get some good stuff on film early, and there's some games you can point to, that Detroit game, which was awesome, and like some other games this season that have been really good. So, Colson, what do we need to concentrate on? Offense, defense, special teams. Do we need to start playing squash? Like,
no, what's like our plan? Dan Burke's thing is, you know, he wants deflections, right?
35 a game, right?
35 a game. So, like, hey, that's being harped on in the locker room every night, and but we're not number one in steals. We're up there in steals, right? We're like top 10,
top
maybe.
We're top five, I think. Yeah.
Top five in that. Okay, so that's something we do well. So that's something we focus on. So there's somewhere to start. Hey, this is our identity, right? But the other thing that you have to do is say, that alone is not enough, because clearly we're not winning games based on
that.
Your
identity can't be stealing the ball.
No, I agree. I agree. Yeah. But what I'm saying is, you start with, hey, we do this well. Now let's focus on something else that we need to have effort on and do well.
But I'm asking you, what is that thing that we should be concentrating on?
Do
you have an opinion?
I do. I think it's two things. I think one, it's sharing the basketball. When Joey said last game that it was really fun to watch them zip that ball around against the Magic. I think when we do that, we play better. We do well.
Yes.
I really like the way that Teague controlled the offense against Chicago. I think if we can start doing that, sharing the basketball, moving the ball around, and not letting it stop, that's a place to start. And then also, it's got to be five guys rebounding. If you got to give up pace to do it, you just have to send everybody to the boards, because that's how we're losing a lot of these games, is rebounding.
Yes.
So if you can't change the personnel and get bigger guys in there or whatever, it needs to be everybody goes at the board, sacrifice the guy leaking out. Everybody's got to go after the basketball.
Yeah. And I'll build on that just a little bit and say – offensively, definitely sharing the ball. Defensively, yes, rebounds are a huge issue. And we've been harping, and the team is starting to harp a little bit more about playing on a string. I think that our identity just needs to be selflessness on the court, right? I mean, when you look at these great organizations like the Spurs or whatever, it's selflessness. Like, and that on defense, that means covering up the next guy, right? That means you're playing for your teammate, right?
Yeah. I think little things like that go a long way. You know, the sharing the basketball feeds into that. Everybody feels like they're involved. Everybody feels like they are contributing, you know, and have a role to play. And then other little things, like early in the season, we were doing things like if a guy got knocked down, two guys ran over and picked him up, like, right away. Or you bring the guys together, you know, somebody commits a foul, it's okay, let's bring everybody together for a quick huddle, you know, one of those 2-second huddles that says, all right, guys, let's go get him or whatever. You know what I mean? Just something to build that cohesiveness, right? That you're playing for one another. It makes you feel accountable for your role on the team.
That's the
and
other
it
part.
Makes you feel involved, right?
Selflessness and accountability. Yep.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's what I would love our identity to be, because correct me if I'm wrong, Joey, but I'm pretty sure that's all the Spurs are.
Yeah, no,
selfless and accountable.
No, they do all of that, and then baskets just go, it just goes in. I don't know what happens. I mean, Kawhi, the ball's just in Kawhi's hands. Nobody knows how it works. Yeah. Except Pop and Duncan.
Mm-hmm.
Did Tim take the secret to his grave?
I don't know. He's robots don't die, Coulson.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Next up, we have another installment of the Undegoogables. Coulson, take it away.
So, I have an Undegoogable this week. Kyle and I were hanging out, and she asked me, what's the difference between a llama and an alpaca? And I, being a dick, said... They're different animals. What's the difference between a dog and a cat? Because I'm a dick.
And you are a dick.
What she said in response is one of the reasons I love her. She said, dogs have owners and cats have staff. So nice. She won that interaction.
Nice.
Shout out, Kyle. That's a win for the win.
But I don't know, and I wonder if we could briefly just go through the differences, the alpaca and the llama.
Can't you make stuff out of an alpaca? Isn't there some kind of alpaca?
Like burgers, right?
Well, no, can't you, I don't know, weave something out of an alpaca?
Yes, you definitely like can. You make thread out of alpaca.
You definitely
thread out of alpaca.
They shear them for their fur, but don't they do that with llamas too?
I think they do do that with llamas.
I did not know that.
Do llamas spit?
Llama farms.
Llamas definitely spit on you from like 10 feet away.
Right. Do alpacas do that?
Boy, I don't know.
I've got a sneaking suspicion that they're the same thing.
They're not the same thing. They're different animals.
Oh, no.
I'm going to go with alpacas. And llamas are closely related, but alpacas live at altitude, and llamas live in deserts.
So, Joe, you think it's like a mountain lion?
And a puma?
Don't mountain lions have and puma like thing? Not puma. Puma is not the right word. But don't mountain lions have an alternate name?
Yeah,
something like that.
Desert lion.
Yeah, sure. Desert lion. So you think it's that situation? In certain parts of the world, they call them llamas, and in other parts, it's the same animal, but they call them alpaca.
I think that might be right. But
they're pack animals for sure, right? And we use their fur, and they're
domesticated, aren't they? Are there wild alpaca?
Not anymore.
Ooh, okay, right, so maybe it's llamas are wild. Llamas aren't wild though, are they?
I mean, they can throw down.
You do not want to be in a bar fight with a llama.
Fact.
I mean, this is opening up a Pandora's box of undergoogleables, but what defines an animal as domesticated, right? Because, for instance, dogs are domesticated, but cats are not somehow. It's because they could survive on their own in the wild, is the definition. Whereas a dog could not.
Don't they have wild packs of dogs?
They're called feral dogs.
Mm.
But there's also feral cats, for that matter.
Right. Right.
I think probably what defines it is specifically bred for domestication at this point.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right. I agree with that. So are we saying that llamas are wild and then we breed alpacas for
I'm going with alpacas thread. Live at a higher altitude.
Okay. I'm going with
I think that they
animals.
Just live in different
That's
places.
That's what I'm going with.
So, Jason, you think they're the same animal, but just live differently?
No, I think they're different animals.
Okay.
I think they're very closely related, but they live in different regions of the world. Like, say,
I'm with Jason.
Alpacas live in
Peru.
I don't know.
Yeah, Peru.
South America.
And llamas live in
Australia Peru. Or something.
Lower elevation Peru.
Lower elevation
Peru. They all live in Peru.
Well, that's been clearly established.
We make burgers out of alpacas, is according to Joey, and llamas.
Yeah.
More of a sausage.
Less. Yeah, more of a sausage.
I couldn't tell you a single thing that I know. So alpacas, when I think of their, I think of like their, you know, their fur being made into things. And I also think, which the one that takes you through the mountains that you that carries all your stuff?
That's a llama.
Is that a llama?
That's a camel. No. That's a donkey.
Oh, right. Like a donkey. Gotcha.
All right. Do you want what the internet says?
I'm ready.
I want to know what site it is first, because I've got a bunch of stuff on this, but I don't trust any of these sites.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm right there with you.
<All right. laughs> Okay, so I am on pinherd.com. Oh, openherd.
I'm on openherd.
What?
Openherd.com.
Herd, like H-E-R-D?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Many people confuse the alpaca and the llama. They're both camelids from South America.
Hmm.
Okay. The easiest difference to spot is the ears. Llamas have long banana-shaped ears, while alpacas have shorter spear-shaped ears.
Okay. That's a lie. The easiest difference to spot is that alpacas are twice the size of llamas.
Right.
Or no, the other way around. Llamas are twice the size.
Yes, sorry.
Llamas can weigh as much as 400 pounds.
Wow.
Where alpacas are roughly between 100 and 175 pounds. Alpaca is been bred for over 6,000 years as a luxury fiber producing animal.
Mm.
And the llama has been bred for the same amount of time as a pack carrying animal. See, we were right. It's good.
Which one of them lives in Peru?
I think they're both Chilean, it seems, from their map. But I think you're right. They're both from the same region.
They are technically different species, is what I'm getting.
Okay. Right, but they're both from the, what was it, the phylum camelids? I don't know. I don't
genus.
Know how you're.
Class.
Genus. Genus class.
King Philbert came over from Germany stoned.
They're of the genus Camelus, and both alpacas and llamas are domesticated.
There you go.
So alpacas are smaller. And you use them more for their fur to make to make things. And llamas,
because llamas are bigger
and bigger,
we just put
llamas
shit
are
on
pack
their backs
animals.
And they carry it. You just throw everything on them, and they carry it for you.
Okay, but llamas and alpacas can crossbreed, and the result is called a warizo.
Mm. Ooh,
that may be the best fun fact coming out of this one.
Wow. Yeah, because crossing them is generally frowned upon by responsible and llama breeders. It does not improve on either animal's desirable characteristics.
So oh.
There's that.
So, Wakaya, is that what you're saying? The name of that in-between animal is? What did you call it?
Warizo.
Warizo.
H-U-A-R-I-Z-O.
Warizo.
Warizo.
Warizo. It's like a chorizo.
Warizo.
It's like a chorizo with a W.
No, not really.
Why is everything sausage with you today?
Joey.
Yeah, I know.
I think we've gone overboard here.
I think it's time to talk about some basketball.
Before I start telling sausage jokes.
Why do you have more than one? Is my question.
He's a bartender.
Oh,
come
that's
on.
True. That's right. Jason, man. I believe the Knicks are taking on the Pacers this week as our game of the week. Game of the week. Game of the week.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Thank you.
Game of the week.
Game of the week.
No, it's not.
Nope, Joey is correct. The Pacers are hosting the New York Knickerbockers on Saturday. It's 80s night in the Fieldhouse, so bring out your hoverboards, bring out your leather jackets for sure. And reference all of the 80 movies.
Lime green sunglasses.
The Knicks currently are one spot below the Pacers as we record this podcast. They are 16-17, and they have lost four consecutive games. So the Pacers have a good chance for a win here. We all know the last time the Pacers played the Knicks, the Pacers were up big and then blew that game, and Carmelo Anthony was to blame. He and Derrick Rose, I suppose. And the Knicks will be coming into this game actually on the second night of a back-to-back. So they will have played at Milwaukee the night before and then take the short flight down to Indianapolis. So this, I think, is a really good chance for a win. Is there any particular matchup you guys are paying attention to? A little Derrick Rose, Jeff Teague action?
McMillan v. Hornacek.
Okay.
That's my pick for the next 20 games.
I want to see.
Oh, interesting.
McMillan v. Coach.
I want to see Thad Young redeem his performance against Melo. He's got to get out to the three-point line if Melo's hitting out there. You just got to get there. You got to stay in his grill and just go to where go to where the hot guy's going.
Also, another unicorn on unicorn matchup here: Miles Turner and Porzingis. See if Miles can get the better end of that this time around.
Like, I just feel like we match up really well against this team, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for us to be dropping games to the Knicks.
Nope. Not at all.
Serafin v. Noah.
Yeah, no, our bench has to win this matchup for sure. The Knicks don't have a bench. We need to rip up on them. I want CJ Miles and Al Jefferson to go nuts in this one.
And Monte Ellis on the
bench. That's right.
From the bench.
Sure.
Shout out Andrew Preston.
That's right.
I think we got this. I'm going to call for a W. It's also Chuck Person bobblehead doll night.
Ooh. Oh, we're not losing.
No.
Not losing on a rifleman night.
No.
That's right.
Do you think the bobblehead is Chuck Person wearing... Chaps.
I really hope so.
If it's not, I'm throwing it on the court.
18,000 of them come flying down on the floor. Like a hockey game.
You promised me chaps.
Take that to Twitter, buddy.
Hey, no, that was what that was how my Christmas ended. I just stormed out.
Yeah, it was a weird year.
It's a weird year.
Until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. Thanks to all your tweets. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. We are on TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can send us all a message. You can review us on iTunes. Really helps new listeners find our show. We got t-shirts for sale.
For our once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard, now in the Hall of Fame. Turn out the lights. The party's over.
Is anybody else getting random banner ads for spinning tops?
Who's buying those?
Dreidel.
Is this on Skype?
No, it's on CBS.
Just your web browser.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Forever Spin. Trademark.
Isn't that just a top? I got an ad blocker on.
Never seen that before.
Is it like the token in Inception? What is this thing?
Yeah.
Forever spin.
But like, why am I getting these? That's what I don't know. What did I Google?
I think it's well known. Maybe, yeah, it's well known in the internet that you have a top collection somewhere.
Did you do some like drunk New Year's Googling?
Potentially.
It's 2017. You're the top, baby.
I was definitely pretty hammered, like, so that's totally possible.
It's like the secret Chinese zodiac year, the year of the top.
Yes. It's not in the regular rotation. It's a deep cut.
It's a deep cut.